Okay. So it said that Esther comes to the king, and after her prayer, she walks in, and the king extends his scepter.
Do you want me to remind you when the time is?
This time I have a watch. I'm okay. We have till 7:35, right? 7:35 is not. Okay, so Esther davens before she enters to the king, and when the king sees her all scared and bent over and her eyes dripping tears, he immediately fills with compassion and extends his scepter, and she comes in and asks her what she wants, up to half the kingdom. He's not willing to let her rebuild that base of Migdash, but anything else she should just ask. And she says that she wants the king and Haman to come to the party. We said that this was supposed to arouse fears in the Jewish people. Has Esther deserted us? She's siding with Haman now. And this was supposed to arouse all kinds of suspicions by Ahasuerus. Why is my wife, instead of having a romantic dinner with me, she's having this guy here? Maybe she wants him as part of the romantic dinner. What's going on between those two? And they come to the first dinner, and the king asks her what she'd like, and she says, I'd like nothing better than that the king and Haman come to a second party, the second meal that we're going to have tomorrow night. And tomorrow I'll do what the king's been asking for so long. I'll tell you what nation I'm from, where my family's from. And Haman leaves the palace feeling very good with himself, that Esther chose no one other than him. And as he walks out of the palace gates, he sees Mordechai sitting at the palace gates where Esther has set up his Sanhedrin with all the kids learning. And Mordechai won't get up and bow to Haman. Haman's wearing his garments that have an Avod Zara drawn in the front and an Avod Zara drawn in the back. And Mordechai won't move. The most Mordechai will do is extend his right foot that has the shtar, that has the contract in which Haman sold himself as Mordechai's slave. And Haman gets upset. He comes home fuming. He gathers all his wise men, and he gathers Zeresh, his wicked wife, the daughter of the king from over the river, and he tells them how great he is and how many children he has. He has 208 children. And Esther, like no one better than me, to invite for the feast with the king. Notice the Vinat Pohu. He is thinking this is for his benefit. This is how great he is. And in truth, we know that Esther is really doing this against him. And they try to figure out, what are we going to do to Mordechai the Jew? All this isn't worth anything in my eyes, Haman says, so long as Mordechai is around. Every time I walk out of the king's palace, I see him. So they tell him, if he's one of the tzaddikim, then if you're going to try to kill him with a sword, so we've already seen that swords turn against the people who go against Am Yisrael with swords. You want to stone him? So we've already seen that David beat Goliath with a stone. If you want to throw him in a pit with snakes, so Menashe is already broken out of that. I'm sorry, if you're going to put him in a vat of copper, so then Menashe, the Jewish king, already was able to escape from a copper vat that they tried to boil him alive in. If you're going to try to throw him into the Great Sea, so the Jews have already split the Great Sea. If you're going to try to throw him into a burning furnace, so Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they were thrown alive into a burning furnace and they got out alive. If you want to throw him into a pit with lions, so Daniel's escaped from the lion's den. What are we going to do? So they said, if you want to sick dogs against them, so the dogs have already been silenced from the Jews when they left Mitzrayim. You want to send them out to the desert? We saw when the Jews got to the desert, instead of being wiped out, they multiplied. What can we do? So what we have to do is we'll put them in jail. From jail, that's where Yosef became king. Yosef, instead of going down in jail, he became king. You want to place a knife across his throat? So there were knives that were meant for Yitzchak. Yitzchak was supposed to be shechted by his father, and you see, didn't work. He didn't end up being shechted. He was up there on the altar, all tied up. The knife was picked up, and he didn't end up being cut. You wanna try to blind him? So look, those who blinded Shimshon. So Samson the Great, our last shofet, look at all the people he killed when he was blinded. So what are we going to do? How are we going to get rid of him? What we have to do is we have to build a large hanging gallows. We have to take a huge piece of wood, a huge plank, and we'll hang him on that, and his blood will drip over our house, and that's the way we'll get rid of him. And Haman liked the idea, and they just came up with this idea, and he was already running to get the workers. His wife got her harp, his wife started playing music. He was dancing and saying, boy, how much money I'm going to pay you guys? You're doing me the greatest favor in the world. I'm going to get rid of my enemy on this street. And they start building this huge post that had to be 6 feet into the ground in order that it wouldn't fall over. That's how high it was. 50 amas high, Chazal tells. That's about 100 feet high. And Haman's dancing there, and that night they're working.
That's about 75 feet.
Okay. That night, Perek Vav begins, Balayla hahu nadido shinas hamelech. And we read that with a special nigun. Some have the custom to say, Balayla hahu nadida shinat hamelech. There's a special nigun. Or, Balayla hahu nadida shinat hamelech. And this simplifies the turning point in the Megillah. That night, the king couldn't sleep. Chazal tell us, who couldn't sleep? What was going on that night? That was the famous night of Pesach. That was the night that our great-great-great-grandmother, Sarah, was taken by the king Avimelech. That was the night that all the firstborns were killed in Mitzrayim. That was the night that all the Jews saw that were finished. Esther took Haman in. Esther wants to get on Haman's good side. She invited him to the party. So the Jews now went into prayer. That night the Jews couldn't sleep. The elders, the kids, everyone went into shul and started praying like they hadn't prayed the first 3 days they were fasting.
And they're saying the king couldn't
What?
And they're saying that the king couldn't sleep.
Well, we'll get that to that. The pasuk literally means the king's sleep was shaky. He couldn't sleep that night. But Chazal tells us it was more than that. The Jews weren't sleeping because they said, even in the Mitzrayim, they didn't think such evil thoughts about us. Tonight, Pesach, we're supposed to be celebrating. We're supposed to speak about how we got out of Mitzrayim. Well, tonight, if we think back how bad it was in Mitzrayim, it wasn't as bad as it is now. The Mitzrayim didn't want to kill us all out in one day. The king of the world, the Ribono Shel Olam, Kaviyochol, he couldn't sleep either. The pasuk says, Kuma Lama Tishan. The Navi says, Ribono Shel Olam, arise, why should you sleep? Obviously this is analogous. Hashem doesn't sleep. But so to speak, Hashem couldn't sleep either. When Am Yisrael sins, Hashem makes like he's sleeping. And when Am Yisrael does tshuva, like Am Yisrael was doing that night in their shuls, so about that time it says, Hinei lo yonum velo yishan shomer Yisrael, the keeper of Am Yisrael, the watcher of Am Yisrael, doesn't sleep and doesn't rest. Mordechai couldn't sleep because the Jews were knocking at his house. They came up to his door and they said, hey Mordechai, this is all your fault. Why wouldn't you bow to Haman? What'd you do to us? Look at this. We're all the decrees that we should all be wiped out because you wouldn't bow, and they wouldn't let Mordechai sleep. Mordechai told them he has an avodah zarah drawn on the front of his clothes and on the back of his clothes, and you know that anyone that bows to Avodah Zarah doesn't live not in this world, not in the world to come. I didn't do wrong, and I didn't bow to him, and I don't regret it. And the Jews were honest enough to be silent when he answered that. Sure.
Today I asked this question to Rabbi Goldenberg and Shearer.
Yeah?
Three sins were supposed to die and not die. The adultery, certain relationships, and murder. And he said that for Christ, for all of Israel, if you're like saving all of Israel, then even two of those three, those relationships and the murder, you can do to save all of Israel or for the sake of Israel. But adultery, that even that you're not supposed to do.
Okay, very nice. Okay.
In fact, I was reading. It says our sages, maybe in
I'm not sure who what they said about that Mordechai actually could have avoided Haman, but he didn't. He actually did the opposite, and he was like getting in his face, like, I'm not going to bow to you because I know you're wearing an idol and you're trying to make us bow to you. He was like, not. He was doing the contrary. And I haven't.
Yeah, okay. Very nice.
Yeah, not, regarding what I said, I'm not sure like what level of idolatry. I don't know if like bound to somebody who has a that counts or not. I don't know.
Okay, that's a good point. That's also a good point. Well, they're all good points. You're all in all good points. Haman wasn't sleeping that night. Haman was busy building the tree. Esther wasn't sleeping that night because she was busy baking bread and arranging a party for the next day for the king. For Haman and Achashverosh. And Achashverosh, the way kings are, couldn't sleep that night. And that's Pashup Shan in the Pasuk. Achashverosh couldn't sleep that night. Started turning to the servants and said, nothing's tasty, nothing's good, nothing's worth anything. The way people usually are when they have everything, so then nothing's worth anything. Started asking, how come Esther's inviting to romantic dinners? How come she's inviting Haman? What's going on? And Achashverosh was saying, what's going on here? How come no one's filling me in? If they're plotting against me, if Esther and Haman have it in for me, and if they could even do this under my nose, she invites him to the dinner, how come no one filled me in? Gavriel, the Malach that fights for Am Yisrael, came down from heaven and started stirring Achashverosh's sleep. And he started speaking in the king's imagination and telling him, you know what? Haman wants you dead. And Haman wants to take your kingdom. Watch. I'm going to show you that he wants to kill you. Ask him what gift you should give to the person that you love, to the person that's faithful to you. And watch how he says that you should give him something that represents taking the kingdom away from you. The king was restless and he was thinking, what's going on? So he asked, bring me the history books. Chazal said, why did you ask for the history books? He said, it must be that someone once was kind to me and I didn't pay him in good turn. So people think it's not worth being kind to me. They don't want to fill me in on what's going on around me because they see that it doesn't pay. And he started reading and came up with the story of Mordechai, that Mordechai saved his life. That story which we said, he didn't have to know it was Mordechai, but Esther was Omer Dover B'Shem Omro. She was faithful to quote the source to say that it was Mordechai's idea, it was Mordechai who had found out, and that Mordechai saved his life from the people who wanted to kill him. Chazal tell us that the servant that was reading the history book, his diary before him, was one of Haman's sons. And every time he'd reach that page, he'd flip the other way. And every time the page would flip back, that's why the pasuk says, "Vayunikroim." The pages were read on their own before the king. The king said, okay, read me something. And he'd open and would say the story of Mordechai, and he'd flip and it would flip back, and he'd flip and he'd flip back again. Every time he tried, he'd say, okay, let me close it and open it, until Achshverosh said, enough, read that page. What does it say there? And then he didn't have a choice. He read the whole story. And the king said, what did we ever pay Mordechai back for that? And the king's servant said, no, we never paid him, we never gave him anything. So the king said, what? Yeah. So the king said, who's out there in the courtyard? And Haman was out there in the courtyard. He had wanted to come tell the king to hang Mordechai on that tree, that large plank that he had set up for him. So Haman's coming to tell him one thing about Mordechai, and he has a different thought about Mordechai. So the king's servants tell him, Haman's out there in the courtyard. So the king says, let him come in. Haman enters, and the king asks him, what should I do to a person that I really want to honor? And Haman thinks, who would the king want to honor more than me? So Haman tells the king, if there's a person that you really want to honor him, take the royal clothing that you wore when you were anointed king. The first day, the clothing that you wore that showed that you were king over the people. Take that horse that showed that you rode the first day you were king, that's the kingly horse, and the crown that they don on the horse the first day the king is made king. Now think about it. Achashverosh is worried that Haman's plotting to kill him. So what better way to kill the king and take his kingdom, then by showing, oh, you see the king let me ride on his horse, the king anointed me, he let me wear all his royal clothing. And the king knew what Haman was thinking, and all the thought he had in his mind. So, give the clothing and the horse to one of the king's officers, and let them dress this man that the king wants to honor him, and they should ride him on a horse around the city, and call out before him, this is what's done to a person that the king wants to honor. So, point aside, not in Chazal, historically, the Persians were the ones that transferred from using camels to horses. They're the ones who were used to Arabian horses, but really the Persians are the ones that introduced the horse riding as the swiftest way of traveling, because the Persian Empire was so great that they paved roads all across the Middle East and Europe. And until then, you couldn't travel with horses. You needed camels in order to cross the deserts. But the Persians, they were the ones that developed great infrastructure, and they were able to use horses and send messengers much more swiftly. And we're going to see later on, the Megillah makes a big issue of the quick messengers that are sent out. Initially, we saw also that the quick messengers were sent out with word that the Jews have to be killed. So here, Haman says, let him ride that horse, that kingly horse, and someone should walk before him, calling out, this is what's done to the person that the king wants to honor. So the king tells Haman, quick, take the clothing, take the horse, just as you spoke, and do that to Mordechai, the Jew that's sitting at the king's gate. Chazal said, why did Achshavosh have to specify? Because he said, do that to Mordechai. And Haman said, which Mordechai? And Achshavosh said, Mordechai the Jew. And Haman said, there are many Jews called Mordechai. And the king said, yeah, Mordechai the Jew that Esther set up his Sanhedrin at the king's gate. And don't leave anything out, Haman. Chazal said, he knew who he was dealing with. So he had to tell him, don't leave anything out, everything you said. So Haman told him, I'd rather be dead. And Ahasuerus said, get with it quick. So Haman did. And Haman took the garments and the horse, and he dressed Mordechai. Chazal said that day was decreed in the city, people had to take off in honor of the festivities, that Mordechai shouldn't be ridden around town. And Haman came to take Mordechai. Mordechai says, I'm in sackcloth, I can't go. So at first when Haman came, everyone ran away from Mordechai. They said, Haman's coming to kill us. And Mordechai didn't run away. Chazal had a whole long discussion between Mordechai and Haman, what they're in the middle of learning, and Haman asked him, what are you learning? And Mordechai explains to him things from the Beis Hamikdash, how we do kmitza, and Haman asks him, look at that, you give a small thing before Hashem, and look at how Hashem likes you more than he likes anyone else. And Haman, this is the beginning of Haman, the representative of Amalek, recognizing that it's not going to help him, we're still the chosen people. And Mordechai says, I can't go like this. So Haman says, okay, so take a bath. So Mordechai says, I'm weak, how can I take a bath? So he says, go to the bathhouse, they're all closed, it's a party today. Today the city's closed. So Haman had to arrange a bath for Mordechai. Mordechai said, I need a haircut. Haman says, well, get one. Mordechai says, I can't, the barbershops are closed. Mordechai tells Haman, look, I know your history. You used to be a barber. You know how to give very good haircuts. You gotta start giving me a haircut. So Haman starts giving him a haircut. When it's time to mount the horse, Mordechai says, I can't, I'm weak. So Haman bends over, and as Mordechai gets on the horse, he gives him a kick. So Haman says, doesn't it say, "Ben follow Yivchal Tismach, if your enemy is beneath you, don't be happy, don't rejoice." And Mordechai says, yeah, that's not talking about you. It's talking about a Jew. So Mordechai's on the horse, and Haman starts leading him around town. At the end of this day, Mordechai returns to the king's gate. He takes off the royal clothing and returns to his sackcloth. And Haman pushes along to his house. The pasuk says, "Avel v'chafui rosh." Chazal say that he had a daughter that was a little crazy. The Medrash says I didn't understand exactly what the Medrash says. If I understood correctly, this was the daughter he had thought he would get Achshverosh to marry. And this was a daughter that when she went to the bathroom, she'd come out very filthy. She couldn't even do that clean until they kicked her out of the place. They said, you're not going to be queen. But that's a little, maybe I misunderstood that. It was an Aramaic. I couldn't follow exactly what was going on there. But this daughter went up to the roof, and she sees that from the rooftop, that someone's being honored, and there's another one leading him. He says, boy, that must be Haman, my father, on the horse, and must be Mordechai leading him. That's the way the king would have it. She just heard the night before how special her father is in the king's eyes. So she took the basin which they used to relieve themselves at night, that was filled with feces and other displeasurable items, and she dumped it on the head of what she thought was Mordechai, and really it was her father. And her father looks up and she sees it's her father. She got so scared she jumped off the roof and committed suicide. So Haman was coming home all stinky after a whole day's work, giving Mordechai a haircut, leading a horse all around town, yelling. He's probably pretty hoarse by now, having feces dumped on him, and he walks home. And he comes home to tell his wife and all his friends everything that happened to him. And his daughter committed suicide. That's why he was avil. He was an avil. And his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, tell him, you know what? If Mordechai is from the Jewish people that you started falling before him, don't stand a chance. It's over. You're going to keep falling. His wife and all his wise men, they told him, look, this Mordechai, he's from the Jewish people. He's from the tzaddikim. And once people start falling before the tzaddikim, Am Yisrael is told they're going to be like the Aftar Haaretz, like the dirt of the ground, and like Koch Ve'ashamayim, the stars in the heaven. When they're down, they seem like they're down to the dust. And when they go up, they keep going up to the stars. The Rambam says that there's more to it than that. Even when we're down like the dust, it's a facade. Because the dirt, the earth that we walk on, we spend our lives walking on the earth. But when we die, we're buried in the earth, and the earth is on top of us. And we end up decomposing in the earth. So the Rambam says, even when Am Yisrael is compared to the earth, that doesn't mean that we're down. It means that people might step on us, but at the end, we're still going to be on top. That's what the Rambam adds an explanation to the fact that we're Kafar Haaretz. So they tell him, look, Mordechai, once you've started falling before him, look, Avram Avinu, look at how he succeeded against the kings. Avimelech fell before Yitzchak. Yaakov won over the Malach. Moshe and Aaron, they ultimately defeated Paro and all his forces. Every kingdom that tried to get rid of the Jews, every kingdom that tried to do bad to them, they fell. And you too, you're not going to succeed in doing bad to them. So they seem pretty intelligent people. They knew so much. And they're in the process of talking, and the king's messengers come, and they're rushing Haman to come to the party. Now Haman didn't get a chance to get ready. He's coming not in a very respectable fashion to attend king's party. The king and Haman come to drink with Esther the queen. And on the second day again, the king asks Esther, what would you like, Esther the queen? Whatever you ask me, I'll give you up to half the kingdom.
Haman was there?
And Haman was there.
He wasn't ready,
but they told him the king's waiting. You gotta go.
So he went dirty?
He didn't have a choice. Esther lifted her eyes to heaven, and she answered the king, and she said, if I find favor in your eyes, and if it makes sense, if it's good before the king, then I'm asking the king to save my life from the hands of my enemy. And I'm asking the king to save the life of my nation from the enemy of my nation. Because we've been sold hefker, we've been sold for free, me and my nation, to be wiped out, to be murdered, to be destroyed. Now the king had spent the whole night before thinking there's someone that's trying to destroy him. And that someone he was thinking is Haman. Now Esther's telling him that she's in danger and someone's trying to wipe her and her nation out. And Esther says, look, if we would have been sold for slaves and maidservants, I would have kept quiet. And historically, that makes a lot of sense, because when the Persians took over the empire, we have a clay tablet that Cyrus the Great left behind. And in that tablet, he proclaims that he's freeing all the slaves, all the servants. This doesn't appear, I haven't found it in any Medrash. But historically, we have this proclamation of Cyrus. It's considered the first proclamation of human rights, because it's the first written tablet that we have that a king says, these are the rights of all my citizens. And Cyrus in that tablet declares that he's freeing all the servants and all the slaves, and the Jewish people had been sold into slavery under the Babylonian Empire. And when the Babylonian Empire was overtaken by the Persian Empire, so the Jews were now freed. So Esther's saying, if we would have been sold back into slavery, we had said that they had formed an alliance and that the first king was a Mede, Darius the Mede, who ruled for only a year. And then his son-in-law, Koresh, Cyrus, ruled. Now, historically, the historians give the defeat of Babylon into the hands of Cyrus, not Darius. But we discussed that it's very hard to follow, and there are different opinions even among Chazal, who was Darius and who was Cyrus, because the term Daryavesh and Koresh were used interchangeably. They were terms like Pharaoh. So it's hard to know what the world calls Cyrus and what we call Daryavesh, if it's a different person, because even what we call Daryavesh, we acknowledge he was sometimes referred to as Koresh, and even Ahasuerus isn't always called Ahasuerus. So that's hard to know. So Esther is saying, if we would have been sold into slavery, I would have kept quiet, because it's not worth troubling the king with it. And the king says to Esther, he says, who is this? Mi hu zeh ve'ezeh hu? Asher melo oli bo la'asot ken. Who feels he's so great that he's allowed himself to do such a thing? And Esther tells the king, it's a man who's a terrible person. It's a man who really wants to kill you. At night when you're sleeping, he's thinking of killing you. And today, he really wanted to wear the royal clothing and ride on your horse. And he wanted to take all your royal clothing and wear it, and it's a man who's been plotting against you, who wants to really take the throne from you, my king. And this is a medrash. Doesn't say it in the pasuk. The pasuk only says it's an enemy, a terrible person, Haman. The Medrash adds that she added all these points, and if we say that from that Esther had Ruach HaKodesh, so that makes it easier to know that she thought all of this. And it could be that it was no secret that Haman was thinking this, that this was public knowledge. And from heaven it was sent that all this honor was given to Mordechai the Tzaddik, my uncle. Mordechai, who comes from the descendants of Shaul, the king, and now she is revealing where she's from, that she comes from kingly blood. And this terrible person is Haman. Haman wanted to hang Mordechai. And Haman hears this, and he's taken aback. He falls back from the king and the queen. The king gets up all upset, and he walks out to his forest. He had outside trees growing, and he walks out to calm down. Haman got up to beg Esther for his life, and he saw that he's finished. Chazal say that when the king went out to his forest, Hashem sent Malachim to start cutting down his trees. So he walks out to the forest and says, who are you? What's going on here? And they said, Haman sent us. We're supposed to be cutting down these trees. So he walks outside and he sees more rebellion. He sees that Haman's cutting down his forest. The king comes back from his walk, and Haman is falling on the bed where Esther is lying. Chazal say that Gabriel came and pushed him. And the king sees him falling over the bed, and he says, what, you want to take my queen when I'm still home? The king said these words, and Haman's face fell. Now Harvona, one of the king's officers, said, hey, there's also that tree that Haman made over his house that he wanted to hang Mordechai that saved the king's life. It's standing over Haman's home 50 amas high. And the king said, okay, hang him on it. Now, Harvona, it's unclear whether he was a good guy or a bad guy. Some say that Harvona really was with Haman all along. But in the last second, Harvona said, gee, I gotta go to the other side. Haman's not doing too well here. But Harvona really stuck the nail into the coffin. Harvona was the one that said this sentence at exactly the right time, where if he wouldn't have said it, we don't know if the king would have calmed down the next morning and said, okay, we banish Haman, we give him lashes, but we don't know if the story would have ended the way it did. So Chavona, right? Chavona says the sentence. Yeah, he adds one more point. Another thing that Haman wanted to hang Mordechai, and he says it at exactly the right moment, and that's why we always say, "Vegam Chavona zocher latov." Even Chavona, we remember him for good. It could be where there's a bad guy all them go along, but in the end, he's the one that helped us save the day. He's the one that really said the sentence when it was necessary. So they hung Haman on the tree, the wood that he had prepared for Mordechai, and the king's anger subsided. On that day, the king Ahasuerus gave Esther, his queen, Haman's house. Now Haman was very wealthy, and Mordechai was introduced to come before the king even closer because Esther had revealed that he was her uncle. Notice, now we're going with the Medrash that he was her uncle. We saw that chat in the Pasuk, and the Pasuk says that she was his cousin. Okay. The king removed his signet ring that he had taken back from Haman, and he gave it to Mordechai, and Esther appointed Mordechai to take charge of Haman's house. Let's recall how the story took place. The third year of Ahasuerus' rule, he makes a party for all his people. After that party that lasts over 100 days, he makes a smaller party, 7 days, for the people of Shushan. At the end of that party, he kills his wife Vashti. Following that, he's remorseful, he wants a wife, so they do a beauty pageant. They gather all the girls. And among those girls is gathered Esther. Esther is taken to the king's home, and ultimately the king chooses to marry her. But when does the king marry her? The king marries her in the 7th year, right? The 7th year of his reign. So 4 years he was wifeless. He didn't have a wife. He had a different woman every night, but he didn't have a wife. Esther's taken to the king's palace in the 7th year, right? Then Haman is set up as the head of Ahasuerus' house. But this is going on in the 12th year of Ahasuerus' reign. So Esther's been queen for 5 years, from the 7th year to the 12th year. In the month of Nisan, the 13th day of Nisan is when the decree goes out. And Haman and the king sit down to rejoice over the fact they're going to wipe out the Jews. Ahasuerus was no tzaddik. We have the 13th, the 14th, the 15th. It's unclear whether the first day that they fasted was the 13th or the 14th. And we enter Pesach. And on the third day, Esther comes to the king. That's the first party. So even though from the beginning of the Megillah till now, we've spent 12 years, now this last part of the story is taking place in all of 5 days. After 3 days of fasting, the decree goes out. Am Yisrael fasts for 3 days. At the end of that third day, Esther comes before the king and invites him to a party. They have a party that night. The next day is that night, Ahasuerus can't sleep. That night, according to one Medrash, is Pesach by night, Leila Seder, but according to another calculation of the days, it's the next night, because they started fasting on the 14th. that's open when they started fasting. So after that first meal, after that first party, Ahasuerus can't sleep. Haman comes before him. The next day, Haman takes Mordechai all around town. And that night is the second party where Haman gets killed. So now we've spent 5 days from the time the decree was made to the time it was annulled. The decree was not annulled. Haman was killed. Now the decree isn't annulled yet. The letter is still going out there, and the people are riding on their horses from country to country. They're all under Ahasuerus' reign, telling people, this is what's going to be on the 13th day of Adar next year, in another 11 months, you're going to be able to kill the Jews. So now Esther again comes before the king and falls before his feet and cries and begs him to repeal the wickedness of Haman who came from Amalek, and his wicked thoughts over the Jews. And again Esther has to come in uninvited and risk her life, and again the king extends his scepter and she begs the king that he should repeal that which Haman wrote, because she says, how could I live, how could I see these bad things happen to my people? How would I be able to see that the place where I grew up, all the people I grew up with, everything is going to be wiped out? And the king tells Esther and Mordechai, I gave Haman's house to Esther. We've hung Haman on a tree for the fact that he thought to extend his hand to do bad to the Jewish people. Now you write whatever you want in my name. Send out a letter to the Jewish people because the Persian edict states that a king cannot repeal a decree that he made. So you have to write another decree. You can't take back what I've already said. But here's my signet ring. Sign it how you see fit. So this takes place in the month of Sivan. So the decree, even though Haman was killed 5 days after he made the decree was still around to Iyar, to Sivan, to the 23rd day of Sivan. So you have a full 2 months where the people of Israel are hanging. They don't know if it's going to be repealed. Yeah. To hang Mordechai. He built one high tree to hang Mordechai on.
How was he going to manage that?
He had hoped to get permission from the king. That's why he was there at the king's gates early that morning to get permission to hang Mordechai so that he could come to the feast all happy that he got rid of his archenemy. But he was planning on killing Mordechai that day and the rest of the Jews at the end of the year. So Mordechai is given the signet ring, and now 2 months have passed where the Jews were in a troublesome state, and they didn't know what was going to happen to them. Just give me the time.
9/7/21.
Okay. And they wrote a letter to the Jewish people, telling them that they're given permission to gather and defend themselves, and not only defend themselves, but to wipe out any army of any nation that chooses to trouble them. And they're allowed to wipe out anyone from men, women, children, anyone that tries to hurt them. They're allowed to take their wealth and destroy them. When? On that 13th day of Adar. So all the people get this decree, they understand that Ahasuerus has switched sides. And we already said that the reason that Am Yisrael weren't wiped out, the reason that the people didn't say, oh, we're given permission from the king to kill the Jews, we'll start today, was because of the first story that happened. They saw how foolish he was, that he's sending out a decree saying, every man rules in his house. So you say, thank you, great. And tell me now that it's morning, right? Tell me now that it's night. What else are you going to tell me? Must be we don't have such an intelligent king. So they couldn't count on his being truthful to his decrees until the actual day came. And that's why they waited, and they were proven correct. Because you see, he permitted a decree to go out in the reverse order, commanding the Jews to fight for their lives. The letter went out, and the Jews were commanded to take revenge from their enemies. They got great quick horsemen to ride out. According to Chazal, the horsemen were commanded to kill the messengers with the first letter, because to ensure that the first letter didn't go beyond that. And Mordechai left the king's palace dressed in royal clothing. And the city of Shushan was rejoiceful because that was the first place that the king's decree went out. Chazal say, the Medrash says, that Mordechai set up at the entrance to his house a royal gate. And on that gate, he had the shape of Yerushalayim, first of all. And on top of the shape of Yerushalayim, I don't know if on top, but together with the shape of Yerushalayim, he had the shape of the tefillin to show the people that he's a Jew, and that it's because he's a Jew that he was given this greatness. Notice the v'napohu, for the fact that he was Jewish, that he was God-fearing. Initially, everyone thought that's what caused us to be wiped out. And ultimately, they recognized that that's what gave us this great redemption. And the Jews were given what we say in Havdalah, La Yehudim, Aita, Ora, V'simcha, V'sason, V'ikar. Chazal say, what does it mean? That they were given permission to learn Torah again, to keep Shabbos and Yom Tov, to do Bris Milah, and to put tefillin. And this seems to indicate that there was some form of decree that was telling them that they couldn't do these things. doesn't say it explicitly anywhere, that Ahasuerus or Haman, maybe it says it in a Medrash that I didn't see, but what we do say is that suddenly the Jews were given permission to keep the Torah, to keep studying Torah, to keep Shabbos and Yom Tov, and to do Bris Milah and wear tefillin again. Now every city that the letter came, obviously the Jews started rejoicing, and when that 13th day of Adar came, the enemies of the Jews that thought they'd rule the Jews gathered and they fought their enemies. The Medrash says that when we have the great numbers of people that were killed, that in Shushan we killed 500 people and the 10 sons of Haman were hung on the same plank that Haman was hung on, and Haman was left hanging, but they put protection on top that the birds don't eat his flesh. So Haman was hanging a long time, a whole year he was hanging there, together with his 10 sons. It's a good point, but it could be it was by the king's decree. That's what it seems like. So 500 people were killed in the city of Shushan, and Chazal tell us these were 500 people from Amalek. These weren't just 500 people. And 75,000 people were killed in all the other cities. These were 75,000 people that were from Amalek. So Purim is the day when we were able to take revenge from the people of Amalek. We didn't just kill our enemies. We killed the enemies that want to see fit that we have no existence in this world, the enemies that attack us for no good reason, the enemies that come to us when we're always on the weak side, and from the beginning of our history, they have proven themselves to be people who want to erase the people of Hashem from the face of this earth. And Esther comes before the king, and the king starts telling her, 500 people were killed in my capital. Chazal say he was upset. But the Malach came and gave him a smack and made him change his mind. So he said, what else would you like me to do? So Esther said, well, if you're asking me, then why not give the Jews another day here in Shushan to do like they did today, and we'll hang the 10 sons of Haman on a tree. And the king decreed that that should be done. And the Jews were given another day in Shushan, and they killed out another 300 people from Amalek. Now the Jews were very careful. In all the cities, they didn't take from the wealth. Even though the decree said they're allowed to take the wealth, they felt that if they do, then Ahasuerus, who was very greedy, even though he was very wealthy, he was very greedy, that Ahasuerus would have a hard time with it, and they wanted to keep in his favor. Yeah, that was to show off his wealth. That was also important to him. But he was tremendously greedy, and that's why they sent word to him, we didn't touch from the wealth. The wealth we didn't take. And so the Jews defended themselves on the 13th day of Adar, and on the 14th day that they rested, they decided among themselves, without the Chachamim's agreement, they decided, we're making a Yom Tov, no one's working, we're going to make it a day of happiness and rejoicing. And the Jews in Shushan, they fought for 2 days, the 13th and the 14th, and they only got to rest on the 15th, and they made the 15th a day of rejoicing. Notice that the Jews did not rejoice on the days when they killed their enemies, they rejoiced on the days they rested from killing their enemies. And as a remembrance for this, the Jews decided that those Jews that live in cities that are open, that don't have walls surrounding them, that don't have fortification, are going to celebrate Purim. Initially they decided, what we're doing is we're sending gifts to one another to show that we're a unified people, like we unified against Amalek, and we're going to make it into a Yom Tov. We don't do work on Purim. That's what the Jews had thought initially. And we're going to make it a day of rejoicing and happiness. And the Jews that live in a walled city, like Shushan, and then they said, we can't honor Shushan, that's a city in Chutzlar. It's what? Eretz Yisrael is going to be considered a not walled city. Because Eretz Yisrael is in ruins now. So they said, we have to honor Eretz Yisrael. That's our hometown. So they said, what we have to do is look at Eretz Yisrael like the time that we conquered it, like the time Yeshua bin Nun. And they instituted that any city that was walled from time Yeshua bin Nun will celebrate Purim on the 15th day of Adar, and this way Yerushalayim, even though the walls were all destroyed, in all the cities of Israel, the walls were destroyed, I don't know if all of them, but probably all of them, they would all be considered walled cities, and this was a way of honoring the land of Israel in the Nes of Purim. And all the walled cities would celebrate Purim on the 15th day as a remembrance of the miracle that we got another day to fight the Amalekis, the nation of Amalek and Shushan, the walled cities. And Mordechai said, when we're instituting this, he saw that the people wouldn't last if they make it into a Yom Tov that they're not allowed to do work. He saw that that wouldn't last. So he said, it's not a Yom Tov. You're allowed to do work on Purim. It's not like any other Yom Tov, like Sukkot or Pesach. But it's not enough that you send gifts to one another, because then not everyone's going to enjoy this Yom Tov. Mordechai instituted another thing called Matonos Levyonim. We have to give special gifts to the poor. You're obligated to give a minimum of one meal, ready food, to be chicken and wine, two brachas, to one person. But poor people, you have to choose two poor people and give them gifts. Give them money, give them food. But that was Mordechai's addition to the institution. And the Jews accepted what Mordechai imposed upon them, and Mordechai wrote this Megillah's Esther. Mordechai, according to one pshat, with Esther, according to another pshat, Esther or Mordechai. And the Jews accepted on themselves for generations to keep this Yom Tov, because any time a group of people in Am Yisrael is saved, they can make a Yom Tov, and it's good for them. But we had, throughout the time of the Second Temple, the next 300 years were filled with redemptions that the Jews encountered. And every time the Jews saw Hashem was helping them, they'd institute a Yom Tov. They had so many Yom Tovim around the year that they compiled the whole Megillah out of it, called Megillah Tanis. But all of those Yom Tovim were ultimately repealed. They were short-lived redemptions. And this redemption, they accepted upon themselves for all the generations to come, so that even though all the other Yom Tovim were ultimately repealed, the letter of Purim, this Megillah, was accepted for Am Yisrael, accepted it for generations to come, and that's why we're still keeping it today, to keep these 2 days of Purim, like Mordechai and Esther had instituted for the Jewish people. And Esther put her royal decree to strengthen this institution. And the Megillah ends by telling us that Ahasuerus taxed the cities, and he was even able to tax the islands. All his greatness is written in the history books of the kings of Paras and Madai. And we'll have one more pasuk in a second. All the Ahasuerus' greatness is written in the history books. So if we think for a second, it could be they did this just to appease Ahasuerus. They're writing this whole Megillah, they have to say something about him. But Chazal tell us that this shows us that Ahasuerus also was repaid for his kindness ultimately to the Jews, that he was given control of the lands that he didn't have it in the beginning of the Megillah. Even the islands he had control over. And we had seen that when Mordechai got all his greatness, so everyone was scared of Mordechai. All the nations started being nice to the Jews. They gave them high positions. They tried to include them in the government. They were scared of Mordechai because Mordechai was getting more and more powerful by the day. The Megillah ends by telling us, Mordechai the Jew, secondary to the king Ahasuerus, was great by the Jews, v'rotzui v'rov echav, and was well liked among his brethren. Even though he was opposed to such a high post, he was the second in command over the greatest kingdom in the world at that time. When it came to all his brethren, he was humble. When it came to the Jewish people, he was well loved, and he constantly seeked the good for his people, and he was a peaceful person that caused peace to reign even for his offspring for generations to come. And with that, the Megillah ends. So, Yishlach.